Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Persecution Bar Edition. Today our featured guest is Morgan Lewis partner Allison Ho, discussing Niguzi v. Mukasey, heard in oral argument on Wednesday, November 5th. Thanks for tuning in. The Supreme Court here considers the persecution bar of the Immigration and Naturalization Act, which prohibits the granting of asylum to, or withholding of removal of, a refugee who has participated in racial, religious, ethnic, social, or political persecution. The case concerns Daniel Germay Niguzi, an Eritrean man who was imprisoned and otherwise persecuted for his Ethiopian heritage and Christian religion in his native country before being forced to serve as a guard at the very same prison where others were similarly persecuted. Having escaped to the United States, Niguzi applied for asylum. Although an immigration judge found him to meet the relevant statutory criteria, the judge concluded he was ineligible for relief because his service as a prison guard constituted disqualifying participation in persecution. Niguzi appealed, arguing that the persecution bar did not apply to him because he had been compelled to serve as a prison guard against his will. But both the Board of Immigration Appeals and the Fifth Circuit affirmed the original ruling. The Supreme Court now considers whether the persecution bar prohibits the granting of asylum to those who were compelled to engage in persecution by threats of death or torture. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mrs. Ho.
Is a father forced at gunpoint to engage in incest with his daughter because of his religion, race, or political views, and told that he and his daughter will be killed if he refuses, barred from seeking asylum in the United States because of a statutory prohibition against any person who ordered, incited, assisted, or otherwise participated in the persecution of any person on behalf of a prohibited factor? If not, would that mean that anyone under Hitler in the Nazi government organizational chart who could credibly say, if I didn't kill Jews, I would have been killed myself, would they be entitled to seek asylum as well? Those were just two of the hypotheticals deployed by advocates before the U.S. Supreme Court in arguing the case of Niguzi versus Mukasey, which presents the question whether the so-called persecution bar, which prohibits the grant of asylum to individuals who assisted in the persecution of others on the basis of protected characteristics such as religion, race, or political views, applies where the assistance was provided under duress or coercion. The case was argued on November 5th, and a decision is expected by June. The case involves the asylum claim of an Eritrean national who was conscripted into the military of that country and forced to serve as a prison guard where the captives were regularly tortured and murdered. A three-judge panel of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit upheld the rejection of Niguzi's asylum claim, applying a prior case holding that the statutory text of the persecution bar is clear, categorical, and provides no exception for assisting persecution under duress or coercion. Other courts of appeals have reached differing conclusions, however, resulting in the intolerable situation that the availability of asylum or the persecution bar at issue can depend simply on where the claim is filed. The Supreme Court is expected to settle the dispute and impose a nationally uniform rule with respect to the interpretation and application of the persecution bar. Precisely what that rule will be, however, is difficult to discern from the oral argument, which invoked examples from Aristotle to the Holocaust and ranged widely from textual analysis to administrative law principles. First, some background on the immigration law at issue in the case. Since Congress enacted the Refugee Act of 1980, the Attorney General, acting through immigration officials, has been authorized to grant asylum to any individual demonstrating a well-founded fear of future persecution on account of race, religion, nationality, political views, or membership in a particular social group. At the same time, Congress has barred the Attorney General from granting asylum to individuals who have ordered, incited, assisted, or otherwise participated in the persecution of others. Over time, the federal courts have divided over whether the so-called persecution bar should apply to individuals who, though having committed or assisted in persecution, did so under duress or through coercion. In other words, the courts were split on whether immigration officials could take duress into account in determining whether otherwise eligible individuals should be excluded under the persecution bar. In mid-March of last year, the court granted review in Niguzi versus Mukasey to resolve the conflict. The petitioner in this case, Daniel Neguzi, was born in Eritrea but was both Eritrean and Ethiopian in background. Eritrean military forces conscripted him to fight in a long-standing war with neighboring Ethiopia. After serving as a gunner on a naval vessel, Neguzi was called to the front lines. He refused, however, to fight against the Ethiopians, whom he called his brothers. His refusal resulted in Neguzi serving 2 years in prison, where he was subjected to hard labor and solitary confinement. During his time in prison, Neguzi converted to Christianity. When Neguzi's prison term ended, he was ordered to serve as a guard at the same prison. According to the brief submitted by the United States government, prisoners were routinely tortured or killed during Neguzi's tenure as a guard, and Neguzi himself received some payment for his service. Neguzi was responsible for ensuring that prisoners did not escape, and routinely stood guard over prisoners forced to lie in the hot sun until they died. According to Neguzi, he frequently disobeyed orders to inflict torture on the prisoners and secretly gave them food and water. Eventually, Neguzi escaped and stowed away on a ship bound for the United States, where he applied for asylum. An immigration judge found that Neguzi satisfied the statutory criteria to receive asylum. But the immigration judge also found that Neguzi's service as a prison guard amounted to assisting the Eritrean government in persecution, thus rendering him ineligible for any relief. The Board of Immigration Appeals agreed with that decision, and the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit affirmed, relying on a prior panel ruling that concluded that whether an asylum applicant was compelled to assist authorities is irrelevant under the statute. Neguzi, in his brief to the U.S. Supreme Court, argued that the text, history, and background legal principles of the statute as a whole all suggest that actions taken under duress or through coercion do not trigger the persecution bar. Any other interpretation, Neguzi argued, would be akin to labeling the victim of a crime as an aider and abettor of that crime. Neguzi also argued that Congress enacted the legislation against the background of the well-established legal principle that individuals should not be punished for involuntary actions. Neguzi thus argued that, in the absence of any indication otherwise, Congress did not intend to eliminate duress as a defense to asylum seekers who themselves were forced to engage in persecution. Neguzi conceded that, under his interpretation of the statute, the government would not be required to grant asylum to every qualified applicant. Instead, according to Neguzi, the statute leaves those decisions to the Attorney General's discretion. Neguzi also argued that a 1981 Supreme Court case, Fedorenko versus the United States, did not require a different result. In Fedorenko, the Supreme Court held that a captured Russian soldier assigned to guard a Nazi concentration camp would not have been eligible for relief under a post-World War II statute governing the admission of European refugees. That statute barred the admission of those who had engaged in persecution. Fedorenko is distinguishable on the law, Neguzi argued, because that statute used different language, and it is distinguishable on the facts because Fedorenko himself did not face threats of death or torture, receive payment for his service, and never attempted to escape. The U.S. government's brief argued that the text of the persecution bar is clear and categorical, making no exception for involuntary conduct or actions taken under duress. Furthermore, the government argued, other sections of the immigration laws, unlike the persecution bar, do make exceptions for those who acted involuntarily, such as the ban on admission and naturalization of members of totalitarian parties. Further, by using the terms assisted, ordered, incited, or otherwise participated in, Congress intended to exclude all persons who took part in persecuting others, regardless of the extent of their role. And historically, the government argued, none of the statutory predecessors of the persecution bar contained exceptions for involuntary conduct. Because Neguzi's conduct is strikingly similar to that of the Nazi concentration camp guard in Fedorenko, the government's brief argued, that decision should apply here in full force. Congress intended, the government argued, to offer the benefit of asylum only to the most deserving applicants and was well within its rights to believe that persecution in any form is unacceptable. Any ambiguity in the term persecution should be resolved in favor of the Attorney General, the government argued, not the alien. Otherwise, in addition to violating the rule that agencies' interpretations of statutes they are charged with enforcing are entitled to deference, the government argued, deferring to the alien here would usurp the Attorney General's discretionary authority. During oral argument, what was perhaps most remarkable was the variety of perspectives from which the justices approached the issue. The Chief Justice, for example, focused on the text of the statute itself, questioning whether, when persons are forced to engage in persecution, they do so not because of the victim's race or religion, as the statute requires, but rather because someone's got a gun at their head. Assistant Attorney General Greg Katsas, arguing on behalf of the government, rejected that interpretation of the statute, pointing out that it would go too far and would protect every single guard at the Nazi concentration camps, who likewise could claim they were merely following orders on threat of death or serious injury. At the same time, the government acknowledged that there would inevitably be sympathetic persecutors who must nonetheless be denied asylum. But those hard cases, the government argued, did not warrant ignoring Congress's clear language and intent. Much of the argument centered on the significance of the earlier Fedorenko case, in which the Supreme Court held that the citizenship of a former guard at a Nazi concentration camp must be revoked under the Displaced Persons Act of 1948, notwithstanding Fedorenko's claims that his service had been involuntary. Justice Ginsburg, for example, asked whether the categorical exclusion of persons who had committed persecution under duress was unique to the Holocaust. The government, however, responded that it would have been odd for the uniquely horrific nature of the Nazi regime to result in a dramatically expanded class of people who can credibly raise a duress defense. Justice Alito was attuned to the practical difficulties inherent in trying to determine precisely what level of coercion might justify what level of persecution. Pressing Andrew Pincus, Ngozi's lawyer, on the issue, Justice Alito asked whether the threat of 20 lashes would be sufficient coercion where an asylum seeker had been ordered to administer lethal gas to 500 men, women, and children in a shed. Without answering that specific question, Mr. Pincus responded that the issue was whether any degree of persecution under duress could be taken into account for purposes of asylum. In addition, Mr. Pincus argued, the Attorney General would retain wide discretion to decide when to grant asylum, even if the court allowed for a duress exception. Justice Alito also pointed out the practical consequences of Ngozi's position, which would entail immigration judges having to decide whether an applicant, who will frequently be testifying through an interpreter, has presented sufficient evidence of coercion or duress, which typically must be determined on the basis of an applicant's testimony alone. Such difficult determinations already have to be made, responded Mr. Ngozi's lawyer, when immigration judges must decide whether someone has been subject to persecution in the first place. To that, however, Justice Scalia responded that to say one question is really, really hard to figure out is no justification for laying on another one. Justice Breyer focused on the background legal principle of interpreting statutes to require a level of intentional or voluntary conduct. Those requirements, Justice Breyer said, were deeply rooted in law and history, tracing back at least Aristotle. The government, however, responded that while it might be appropriate to read those requirements into criminal statutes, the statute at issue in this case was not such a statute. The law of asylum is simply different, Mr. Katsas argued. Justice Scalia agreed, emphasizing that the statute at issue is not imposing punishment or casting blame, but rather setting limits on a benefit. Limiting the nation's generosity, according to Justice Scalia, may or may not have anything to do with blame. The justices thus were attuned both to the very practical consequences of interpreting the statute, as well as to the broader legal, moral, and historical issues and principles at stake. In one respect, a decision in Ngozi's favor may well raise more questions than it answers, as the precise contours of a duress or coercion defense are likely to be left to the Department of Justice to be defined through regulation and case-by-case adjudication. And of course, because the case involves the interpretation of a statute, any decision by the court will be subject to congressional override, should the legislature choose to do so. Thank you for listening to this podcast, and thank you to the Federal Society for providing this forum for discussion.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video from past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at federalistsociety.org/multimedia.